Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps, and thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman. 2,000 years ago, all roads led to Rome. And while Rome wasn't built in a day, today it might not get built at all. Because roads and riverways no longer dictate where cities are sited. It's the highways in the sky that'll count, according to the authors of a new book, Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next. It's by John Casarda and Greg Lindsay. Greg Lindsay recently talked with Living on Earth's Steve Kerwin.
So what is the Aerotropolis?
You know, the idea of an Aerotropolis is, and it's, you know, it can mean either a city built from scratch if you're China or India, or it can sort of apply to the cities we already have, the cities that are more connected globally to the other side of the world than they are to their own hinterlands. And, you know, so an Aerotropolis could be, you know, Dubai is an interesting example of a place that didn't exist 20 years ago and only exists by the grace of air travel. Or it can mean a city like, in some ways, I think Dallas-Fort Worth is an example. There was a place where, you know, the notion of Dallas-Fort Worth didn't exist until 1973 when the airport opened. Air travel has changed the literal scope of our universes. It's made it possible for us to do things that were never possible even a generation or two ago. You know, and I think in Europe that's particularly more recognized. There's some estimates that there's a phantom suburb of 1 million people of London that basically commute from, you know, Spain and the Mediterranean on a weekly or daily basis. And that's good for both the people who do it because they're able to command those wages in London. And then it's an amazing thing for London. I mean, it makes London even more of a talent magnet. It makes that city even more vibrant and rich.
I gather this is a concept that was developed by you and Dr. John Casarda. He teaches entrepreneurship at the University of North Carolina. I think Dr. Casarda sees this more as an urban layout that revolves around an airport, whereas you, Greg Lindsay, see this in broader terms as a closer relationship with the air, something I think you dubbed the instant age.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ideas that I wanted to sketch out in the book and sort of take Dr. Casarda's views a little more broadly was really sort of to sketch out how air travel underlies our daily lives more than we know. I think most people tend to think of air travel as your annual holiday to Florida or California, when really that air travel has grown over the last 30 or 40 years into the mechanism that is globalization. I mean, it's what delivers your iPad to your doorstep from China. It is what sort of delivers increasing amounts of food from the other side of the world. It is this sort of whole system that has sprung up invisibly in the form of FedEx and UPS and others that really support what we think of as contemporary life. Casarda's vision of the Aerotropolis is, so he imagines cities where the airport, is the terminals are at the heart of the city, and then you can basically draw rings around it as functions that need to be close, like cargo hangars are in the inner rings, and then office parks, and then so on and so on. And that's exactly what they're sort of building in the middle of China right now. It's fascinating.
Now, Greg, of all the cities that you visited and studied in your research for this book, which one strikes you as the most compelling or perhaps the most meaningful?
I would say the most compelling to me was Dubai. And I don't say this in sort of a sense of, I enjoy it or I endorse it in some ways. But Dubai strikes me as in many ways the city of the future for good and for bad. And I think Americans should pay very close attention to it. Dubai basically remade itself as the crossroads of what's being called the New Silk Road, the trade routes that go from China to the Middle East, India, and into Africa. This is sort of the navel of the world on the other side. And I think it has repercussions for all of us because Dubai is a city that would not exist without America, either because we kept them out and also because our driving habit, our gasoline, basically paid for many of those towers to build. And so by our refusal to engage with all these people on the opposite side of the world following 9/11, we basically left them to forge new connections between each other. And, as I touch upon in the book, you can trace those connections by their air routes. You can see how the Middle East has become a giant global air hub. You can see how these traders are moving back and forth through the region. And I think it's something we've missed. Too busy been focused on our McMansions and our wars.
So, Greg, what do these cities mean for the environment? What about climate? What about peak oil? I know at this point air travel is only 2% of global CO2 emissions. On the other hand, it is 2% of global CO2 emissions.
Well, that's an interesting thing. I mean, with cities, it really comes back to cities. I mean, that strikes me as the biggest challenge facing the world is, cities are half of all people, but they're 72% of all electricity consumption. The built environment is the largest single source of carbon emissions. So it's interesting. I mean, you could look at the notion of the wave of city building, particularly around air travel, and look at it as an ultimate negative, the thing that will finally push us over the edge. Or as a number of people have done, you look at this opportunity to build it right this time. But really, it comes back to, the fact that we are going to sort of double, you know, the urban footprint of the Earth in the next 20 years. And to me, the larger question is, you know, when it comes to peak oil and it comes to climate change, is really the notion of globalism itself. I just read a report by Greenpeace that, you know, the data centers, you know, the kind used by Google and Facebook and everything else, is another 2% of all electricity consumption. And that doesn't count the devices we actually use. So, you know, whenever I read about, you know, or talk to people about, you know, that we need to cut back on flying, we need to cut back on travel, you know, the statistics show historically that the more we communicate, the more we're likely to fly. They're not substitutes, they're complements. I do hope, you know, in the case of aviation, that, you know, the next generation biofuels provide an answer, that we can basically scale this up. Because if we don't, I mean, you know, I think we're just going to see people fly regardless and, you know, and pump increasing amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
So how do you get people to go along with your view that the aerotropolis is the way that we'll live next in a positive sense? I mean, my perspective of the airport and airplanes is what? On the airplane, there's no legroom. There's bad food. Most people give out a groan when they think about going to the airport and dealing with the airport.
Well, you know, I think the comedian Louis C.K. put it best, you know, when he did his classic sketch, you know, everything is amazing and nobody is happy. I mean, you know, you're in a chair in the sky traveling at 600 miles an hour at 35,000 feet. I mean, you know, you can cross the country in 6 hours. Your scope of movement around the world is amazing, and we're able to keep in touch with friends and family that we've never had, you know, and we're also able to do business on a scale. I mean, it allows people to really sort of market their skills and really engage with the world. I do a lot of flying, and I still think that air travel is at its core something wondrous, something that is, you know, never achieved. It goes back to Icarus. It goes back to myth.
How inevitable is the aerotropolis?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. There's a report that came out by McKinsey that I was just reading. It was called, sort of mapping the future of cities. And McKinsey basically predicted that 100 cities by 2050, or by 2025 actually, would have a third of all global growth. And then the next 500 would have the next third. So basically 600 cities would have two-thirds of all growth going forward. And the rest sort of didn't matter much. They were in the long tail. And so you have leaders all over the globe right now basically trying to figure out how they can get their cities into the top 600, because otherwise they see it as they don't count. And those are the places that are sort of rushing to build these connections through the air. There will be, you know, these cities that are trying to force their way into the global trade routes and force themselves to become a world power, like a Dubai, you know, which basically tried to present itself as an equivalent to London or New York in the span of 10 years. Those are the places that are going to sort of pursue this. And I think it's easy for us, the United States, to dismiss it. And I think we fail to recognize just to what lengths, you know, those who are aspiring to be to live as comfortably as we do will go to in an attempt to build themselves into world powers overnight.
Greg Lindsay is co-author of Aerotropolis, The Way We'll Live Next. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Greg Lindsay talking with Living on Earth Steve Kerwin.